Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text LOSE to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text LOSE to 200-300. That's LOSE to 200-300. LOSE to 200-300.
At Traditional Medicinals, we're thrilled to announce our new line of energizing black teas. Our herbalists have blended organic Assam and Darjeeling black tea with beneficial herbs and spices to create revitalizing, refreshing, and invigorating teas, sure to put a little pep in your step. Find all our new teas at Whole Foods or order online using the code WELL20. Traditional Medicinals. It's amazing what a plant can do.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another enthralling episode of your new favorite podcast. It's Commit or Quit, fam. I'm Eric.
This is Eddie.
And welcome to this show. This week, we are joined by another special guest on the Zoom house, pretty much. And you may know him from his work, Fresh Off the Boat, Always Be My Maybe, Veep, Ant-Man, upcoming WandaVision, and even The Office. It is Mr. Randall Park.
Dude is an absolute legend. I'm so excited to be speaking with him today.
He's great. I mean, this is a great conversation. And I was a fan of him before the conversation. And I'm even more of a fan now.
Yeah. I can't wait to hang with him in person.
Yeah. So we talked about his current favorite show called Last Dance, which is a docuseries about Michael Jordan. So we talk a little bit about sports. But trust us, it's not like sports heavy. It's more fun discussion heavy.
Life heavy.
We even talked about Tom Hanks and Randall's Tom Hanks story.
Right.
So get ready. Buckle in. Get yourself a nice cup of coffee or tea or a drink. And hope you enjoy this episode of Commit or Quit.
Enjoy.
Hey, what do you want to watch?
I don't know.
Oh, I actually heard this is really good.
What do you say? Should we commit or quit?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show and please welcome our guest of honor. I'm so excited to talk to this guy. We have Mr. Randall Park on the line. Hey, how are you, Randall?
Hey, I'm doing good. Doing really good. Excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us on this humble little makeshift podcast we do over Zoom.
I love it.
How have you been?
I've been good. I've been real good. You know, I feel, especially like reading everything that's going on in the world during this time, I feel very lucky and you know, quarantined at home with the family. And, it's been oddly kind of busy, you know, because we're doing a lot of work remotely. We're hanging in there.
I mean, you know, we're right there with you. It's weird. You know, quarantine, you would think people's productivity would kind of drop and we would have some time off. I feel like it's the opposite where because we're constantly available and accessible, we end up doing more work than previous.
There's no separation.
I mean, in that regards, we're pretty lucky because I think the things that we do and the things that we're like interested in, we're able to kind of at least do some of that stuff. At home. Yeah.
Right. But what were you doing before, you know, all this isolation stuff? I know you were busy in Atlanta shooting for a lot of projects.
Yeah. I was in Atlanta. I was working on a show called WandaVision, which is a Marvel studio show for Disney Plus. That's I think they're actually we're still in production when this thing ended, so they're going back. But I finished all my stuff.
Okay.
Before and I went back home and And the next thing you knew, a global pandemic hit us.
I know. I mean, I was, you know, we were supposed to meet in person for the first time at my show. I was so excited. And then the day I got in, it was like, oh, we got to pull the plug.
Yeah.
So I was bummed, but I'm excited that we get to talk and catch up here.
Yeah, me too.
Commit or
me
quit.
Too. I wish we well, we will meet each other in person soon, or soon after this is done. I'm sure. But
absolutely.
But yeah, I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, thank you for joining us. If you guys do not know who Randall is, you guys are clearly sleeping in a cave that is under a rock underneath some waterfall, because he has recently been everywhere. And I'm very much a fan of Randall because I think he is one of the very few people who look like I do as an Asian American, who has a great sense of humor and sensibilities, portraying all sorts of different characters on movies and TV shows and a great slew of projects. So I think today Eddie and I were both really excited to kind of dive into, you know, also what influenced you to become an actor and who were your influences growing up? What was that process like? And as an Asian American actor, there weren't many people, I guess, in the States that you could kind of look at and say, I'm going to be like him.
Right.
Who those figures were for you as well? I know that's a packed question, but...
Yeah. Well, you know, when I was growing up, I had no inclination towards any sort of career in entertainment. As a kid, all I would do was draw pictures all the time. That's all I loved to do, was just draw and paint and do that sort of stuff. It wasn't until college, when I went to UCLA, where a group of friends and I decided to start this theater, this Asian American theater company. And because I was writing at the time and wanted to, and thought maybe I'll become a writer, and started writing plays, and we put together this company, and that's what kind of got me on stage for the first time acting. And I just fell in love with it. I really fell in, like, just loved it, and felt like, oh, this is amazing. What a rush, you know? And that's what kind of, planted the seed in my head that this was something that I might want to do. So before that, I never really thought about it, you know. I there weren't a lot of Asian folks on TV, folks who looked like me. I mean, you know, every now and then you'd see somebody, but I never really questioned that. It wasn't like it wasn't a problem to me. I was just it was just like, hey, I love Indiana Jones, and I identify with Indiana Jones, and oh, there's Short Round. He's funny, you know, but I didn't really identify with Short Round, you know.
Right.
But then once I decided to that this was something I wanted to do, and then being in college at UCLA, where there were a lot of Asian Americans, and I was immersed in this community, that's when I started to realize, like, oh, wow, this is a problem. The fact that there aren't people who look like us, like, being represented out there. And so that kind of informed my desire to pursue this as well, you know, to kind of hopefully be a part of this change.
Right.
But with that said, there were a lot of heroes I had, you know, folks like Margaret Cho, you know, who I was a huge fan of. I remember Pat Morita was like somebody who I'd see growing up. First time I saw him was on this show called Sanford and Son. It was this sitcom that I loved, and he popped up on there, and then he popped up on a bunch of other things. And next thing you knew, Karate Kid, and this guy was, you know, a legend. And there were certainly a lot of people that I looked up to, especially once I decided this was something I wanted to do. Once I got in it, it was like, oh, wow, it's hard for me now. I wonder how hard it was for them, you know? Once I got in it, then I really started to learn more about kind of the folks who came before me and you know, how much they had going up against them in this industry.
And Randall, during this time in college, this theater club that you're a part of, you had some pretty notable names and friends even still to this day, right?
Yeah. As you guys know, a lot of actors who are working steadily in the business, the most notable being Ali Wong. She came from that, the great comedian, Ali Wong, who I did Always Be My Maybe with. She came from that theater company. So yeah, it kind of gave birth to a lot of great careers.
That's incredible. So obviously, you know, I think with one thing that I really enjoyed in Always Be My Maybe is the fact that you played such an average Joe.
Yeah.
Just like this average guy and the relationship with his father. And I was like, I love just being able to see an Asian dude play just this average, average guy.
Yeah.
That, it was so endearing to me. And it was so like relatable. I was like, you know what? Like that's like, for so many people who are watching this, it's going to be so relatable.
Yeah.
Speaking of just like, you know, I'm sure that you had this period of after graduation, though, instead of going right into acting or landing your first gig, there must have been a period of you doing odd jobs or doing a different career. Like, what was that process like? And what was what you consider to be your big first break?
So after college, so that seed was planted. I knew that I loved like comedy. I knew that I loved acting and writing, but I didn't feel like it was like a viable career option. Mm-hmm. So I started to think of what I was going to do, and I ended up going to grad school, doing a few years in Asian American studies, thinking I was going to become a professor. But then midway through that, I was like, yeah, I don't know if I want to be in this world of academia. I ended up picking up some graphic design skills, and I just ended up working in graphic design for like print this newspaper for a few years, just kind of biding time, trying to figure out what exactly I wanted to do with my life. But in the meantime, I was on the side, I was doing stand-up comedy, I was doing improv, I was doing all these other things just for fun. But clearly my passion lied in those other things, you know, even though I was working this like day job. And eventually I started auditioning on the side, you know, just kind of for fun, slowly started just working. And I think my first kind of, I'd say my first kind of big break was there was a show that Nick Cannon created. It's still going on to this day, called Wild and Out.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was a it was basically an improv show at the time on MTV. Now it's like in, I don't know, it's gone so many seasons. It's kind of an institution.
Right.
And I'd say that was my first kind of semi-regular job. And after that, I was like, oh gosh, I'm going to make it. You know, I think I'm going to make it. And, you know, and then the road was a lot bumpier after that for a while. But that was definitely a big boost for me.
Man, I had no idea. I'm going to have to like go back on YouTube and try to find those clips.
Yeah, I was on there. I made some great friends on there that I still have to this day. And Nick Cannon kind of gave me my first big break.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's super cool.
Yeah.
It's incredible to know, you know, you've just taken such an amazing career trajectory. But the reason we got connected was to talk about Imminent Collision. And through your producing partners. And I think what you guys are doing is so cool and incredibly impactful. For people who do not know Imminent Collision, do you mind sharing just a little bit about what it is and why you started and why it's important?
Sure. So when I was at UCLA in college, we started this Asian American Theater Company. It was this magical time. We just put on these shows that we wrote, basically stories, mostly leaning on the comedy side from an Asian American perspective, just talking about our lives and our experiences. And it was that planted the seed for not just me, but for a lot of us to want to pursue this for a living, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And cut to many, many years later, as an actor, I kind of go through this long journey that brought me to a place where I was, I felt like, oh, I think it's time I could start a production company. I was fresh off the boat, had just ended, and I was thinking about the next things that I wanted to do, and I wanted to kind of have more control over that. And I felt like, oh, well, you know, producing is a way to do that. And I connected with my old friends, Hugh and Mike, from that theater company at UCLA. And we were like, and we all had been going our own kind of separate routes. Mike as a writer, he was a producer and an executive. And we all got to a point where we felt like, why don't we bring the band back together and do what we were doing in college, which was creating these stories from an Asian American perspective that are kind of, you know, more leaning on the comedy side, and just try to do it for the world, you know. Right. And so we formed the company. We went out to all the studios in the industry, the TV studios, pitched our company, and we just got offers across the board. Like, everyone was down. We were actually surprised, because we were like, we thought it was probably going to be a long shot. I mean, a TV production company focused on Asian American stories, that's like very specific for this industry, you know.
Right.
But people got it. You know, they understood what we wanted to do. And so we ended up signing a first look deal with 20th Century Fox. And now we're basically putting together, meeting with talent, meeting with great people like you guys, and collaborating on shows.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible. That's so exciting. Yeah. I can't wait to see how some of these projects come to life in the future.
And just to add to that, I think when Fresh Off the Boat came on to cable, we were all so excited. I mean, that was back in 2015. It's only been 5 years. And in that amount of time, like, we're just scratching the surface. So for something like Imminent Collision to come through, I think it's such a beautiful time.
Totally. Like, yeah, you need a Fresh Off the Boat to kind of get to that, other kinds of shows. You know, we talk of, you mentioned, like, just an average Joe, Asian American, you know, represented on screen. Like, that's like something new still, you know, like, but there's a lot of experiences within our communities, you know, that, I mean, they're bad Asians, you know, there are, you know, and those stories haven't really been told enough, you know, from the perspective of that character, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, we want to be able to tell stories from the entire breadth of the Asian American experience, and not just like specific communities, but, you know, as many communities as we can find voices from.
Right. I thought, and I knew that things were changing when I was getting friends calling me from Atlanta in the deep South saying that I should watch Always Be My Maybe. Right. I was like, oh, this is great. The power of Netflix and this Asian cast and Randall at the helm. It was just it was a big moment. Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was cool. That was a great experience.
Yeah. You know, now talking about stories, we should start talking about the story we have for today in front of us. You know, we are talking on Commit or Quit. And if you are listening for the first time, Commit or Quit, we pretty much dive into a movie or a series, and we watch the first two episodes, and we decide if we like it and we commit to the show, or we hate it, we drop it, we quit it. And we asked Randall to recommend a show for us today. And you came back with one of the hottest new docuseries out there right now. It's called The Last Dance. Is there a particular reason why you wanted to talk about The Last Dance today?
I mean, really, I really wanted to see it, you know. And then when you guys reached out, and it was just an excuse to, I mean, I was going to see it anyways, you know, but it just kind of timed out perfectly because it had just come out. Mm-hmm. I had it, I hadn't seen it yet, and I was going to see it anyways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is my like era, you know, of bad. I'm not like a huge sports fan by any means, but during that time I was really into basketball, and so a lot of it brought back so many memories of my like, you know, younger years.
A lot of nostalgia. Even I was watching and I was like, man, I remember glimpses.
Were you even born? Were you guys even like born at this time?
Were we fully functioning humans? Not fully functioning, but somewhat functioning.
Yeah.
You were crawling.
Yes. But I do remember, like, we had older cousin who was just obsessed.
Right.
And I do remember like probably like 96, 97, 98 around there, just being like, who is this guy and why is he everywhere?
Right.
Yeah. Why is the world talking about him? And that was probably like our first introduction into who Michael Jordan was.
Right. Yeah.
So without further ado, for our listeners' sake, we're going to tell our listeners just a little bit about The Last Dance. Eddie, yeah. Do you want to jump into just like the basics right now?
The basic synopsis?
Yeah.
So for those of you who aren't familiar with Michael Jordan and why the Air Jordan brand is so huge, I just want to set the table as to why he is highly regarded as probably the GOAT, the greatest of all time in basketball, and why he's being compared to LeBron James on a daily basis. So just to set the table, Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls were the most dominant team in the 90s, with over 5 NBA titles in 7 years leading into the 97-98 season. This is like the whole premise, and I think what they're trying to unpack in this show. So episode 1 goes into showing how dominant Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls were. And it kind of flips back and forth between Jordan's college career into his first season in the NBA and then back to present time leading into this last dance 97 season. And it ultimately just follows the challenges that they're about to face as they grow into their older years and later stages of their career.
Right.
And Eric, you want to talk a little about episode 2?
Yeah. So episode 2 is less focused on Michael Jordan and how great of a player he is. I mean, there's plenty of it. You know, it's mind-boggling how great he is. And it's crazy that they have all this footage. But it starts opening on his wingman, the number 2, Scottie Pippen. And he is probably, arguably, at that point, the number 2 best player in the NBA. Yeah. So he's the second best player in the NBA, number 1 in assists on the Bulls, number 2 in scoring, only second to Michael Jordan. And yet, here's the catch. He's the 122nd highest paid salary in the NBA, which is insane to me. Incredibly low. So throughout the introductions to who Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen are, for those of you who are completely not sports followers or you're too young to know who they are, the first 2 episodes, you get a good glimpse into who they are. But then the big plot here is that these players and their head coach, Phil Jackson, are not on the best of terms with management and ownership of the Bulls, namely the 2 Jerrys, Jerry Krause and Jerry Reinsdorf. And so these 2 people, as with any business, they're thinking about the future. They're thinking strategy. How do we keep this legacy going? Right. How do we steal the best players from all over the world? And so they're thinking about phasing out this dominant, legendary, world-class team. And that's where there is this tension and this building of, I guess, disdain and hatred and friction between the entire team and the organization, which is insane because they're literally at the top of the world.
Yeah.
You know? And so just to wrap up the synopsis just a little bit, I know this is a little longer, but what happens? It ends.
It basically ends back into a flashback of Jordan's second season and when he's dealing with an injury and his first encounter with Bulls upper management and how they're dealing with the situation, how they're willing to throw this season away to get a good lottery pick in the next draft. However, Jordan's ethos is always whenever you play, play your hardest and win no matter what. So it kind of foreshadows the challenges that he's going to face along with Scottie Pippen down the line in the later 90s, even when they're the best team in the world. You know, over a decade ago, they're going to have these challenges early on. So this was insanely entertaining to me. given the current nature and no live sports right now, like I was getting chills. I was looking at my wife like every 5 seconds. I'm like, this is awesome. This is awesome. So Randall, thank you so much for choosing this. I'm so excited to discuss.
I know, me too. It was, I mean, it's just 2 episodes in too, but just so entertaining and informative and a glimpse into, I mean, not just the NBA, but just really any sort of big business, you know, and the conflicts that could occur. I just loved it.
I'll be honest, I'll be frank. I do not follow basketball. I barely follow sports.
Yeah.
Me too.
But it was enthralling to watch because it's just a great story.
Yeah.
It's a great story and it's entertaining in so many ways. And so for listeners, I mean, our listeners are generally what we imagine really love Asian entertainment, K-pop, K-dramas. The natural inclination is I say, I'm going to watch a sports documentary. But We're talking about it today, and I'm really excited to talk about it.
I'm with you. I'm not a sports guy at all, you know. Mm-hmm. When I found out that you guys did Itaewon class already, I was like so bummed because I wanted to talk about that. But I love sports documentaries. Mm-hmm. And especially the ESPN 30 for 30s. I've seen like every one, mm-hmm. Even though I don't know what the hell like these sports are about. But the stories and the struggle and it's just all so compelling.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. I think, you know, there's so many things that we could talk about just in these first two episodes. And I think maybe a good place to start off is maybe just Michael Jordan. He is obviously the central character. He's a central figure here. And there's obviously a lot of amazing footage that they have just in archives that have never been released before. Mm-hmm. Interviews and behind the scenes kind of stuff. And then there's him in current times doing interviews for the docuseries as well. But for people who may not understand the gravity and the magnitude of who Michael Jordan was, Randall, could you provide just a little bit of context of what it was like watching his career in the 90s?
I mean, there was... In the documentary, one of the sports analysts said that basically he's at the level of Babe Ruth and Muhammad Ali, and right. That's it, like as far as sports legends. And I'm sure a lot of us have probably never seen Babe Ruth in action, but we're aware of the name, you know. Right. and Muhammad Ali, one of the greatest of all time. I mean, it was like watching poetry in motion, like mm-hmm. like just the his instincts and his and the beauty of not just of his, how like great he was at basketball, but just he was also this like beautiful guy. He was like mm-hmm. he was this complete package of a basketball player, and it's like so marketable, mm-hmm. so just hardworking and focused. And And just, again, like you said, just, you know, winning was everything for him. Right. And it's just this calm. And also he happened to be on this team that was the perfect team for him. Right. It just so happened to be like this culmination of all these things that made him so iconic to this day.
Absolutely. I mean, one thing I was recently during the tour, I had the opportunity to visit Nike headquarters, and they were telling me like a fact that there's like the sports category for clothing and apparel. Obviously it's like Nike is number one, Adidas is number two, and number three is Air Jordan, just wow. in itself, which is owned by Nike. And I never understood like why it did so well, but like starting to watch this and understanding how big of a deal he was is yeah. finally putting it into context for me.
And Randall, you've seen it through the 80s. Like you saw it yeah. from the UNC Chapel Hill days when he was exploding in college basketball.
Yeah. I mean, when I was growing up, it was the North Carolina Tar Heels jerseys and athletic wear. I grew up in LA. Mm-hmm. But that was the cool thing to wear.
Right.
The light blue Tar Heels apparel. Like all the cool kids had the Tar Heel starter jackets, you know, like
that's right. So funny.
Yeah, because I mean because of Jordan.
Mm. That's amazing, because I'm gonna give it from a 90s perspective. Yeah. I had a Chicago Bulls jersey and a hat, and I'm from Atlanta, and I was like yeah.
I remember
six
that.
Or seven. And I didn't even know why I was wearing it. I guess it just looked cool. Kids were talking yeah. about it.
Yeah.
We had
yeah.
the one that had like the light
the
up
lights.
Pin.
Yeah,
you know, so you turn it on inside and it flashes on the front.
Oh my
and
god. It's, oh wow. Like our cousin who I guess he's like around 45, 46.
Yeah.
He was telling me to collect Michael Jordan, like the basketball cards, because he said it was going to be worth a lot of money one day. I have like a Michael Jordan card case of like 500 different pictures of Michael Jordan. Probably yeah. is worth nothing. But I didn't even know why I was collecting them. I just thought it was gold.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like he was so popular that people who had really no interest in basketball just were just invested, you know, like just because he was just so iconic and so just like ever present. And, you know, he was what was cool, you know, everybody wanted a part of that.
One thing that I really appreciated, I guess, watching this, and obviously I always take it to mind, like, this is a documentary and they're going to try to show the good sides of people when it comes to like the protagonist. But it seemed like Jordan, you know, was just a very, very competitive, hardworking, like, athlete with values and morals, which was very encouraging to watch, you know? That's not always the case.
Yeah, I mean, you see his early interviews or throughout his career, his interviews, I mean, he's always talking about the team, you know? It's never like me. He's not talking about, even though it was clearly in a lot of people's head all about him, you know?
Right.
But he was always quick to talk about the team, and I really respected that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when it comes to, you know, teamwork, it's, I think that teamwork is such an interesting theme in this entire series, because between the players and the coach, it's incredible teamwork. And all throughout, you know, Michael Jordan will still say, Scottie Pippen, if it wasn't Scottie, then like this never would have happened. And it's shown.
It showed,
in the documentary how the team fell apart and they started losing everything.
Yeah.
But then it's also the mentality of, but your organization should also be a team. It's this direct, what do you say, contradiction that I felt like I was watching in this series. Which I don't know, like for me, I feel like I've gone through moments of that, just in entertainment. There are always some very interesting struggles and power plays that come into.
Well, you have to be put in place, right? You can't become larger than the organization. They always say, like, if a celebrity or an athlete or an actor becomes bigger than the organization, then it's all going to fall apart. Mm-hmm. So they're just trying to keep them in place and say, hey, you're just a player. You're a commodity, you know, you're an asset right now. But the moment you start hitting 34, 35, like, you're on your last legs. And they make that very clear. Jerry, the GM, the way he treated Scottie Pippen, and he's holding out for a better contract. He's just treated with no respect. But, you know, it's a business.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, they didn't, I think it because they had Jordan, they didn't, he didn't, like, he couldn't see what he had in Pippen, it feels like. Because Jordan was like, I want more money, he'd get it, you know? Like, they'd give him anything and everything. But and they didn't realize that in Pippen, they had essentially, were it not for Jordan, the best player in the NBA, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or at least one of the best players. And they just, because he was in the shadow of Jordan, they were messing around with him, it seemed like.
I had a moment yesterday as I was watching. I was like, Michael, just give him some of your money.
Yeah. I know, me too.
I was like, dude, you have so much money. Just give him a little more of yours and like, it'll be fine.
I thought, you know, I thought the same. Or what I thought was, Michael, you know, stand up for your guy. And tell Jerry, like, you know, you got to pay him more. You just got to pay him more.
That's exactly where I wanted to lead into this, right? We were talking about teamwork being such a central theme in the success of a team. But as Pippen is like telling us the struggles he's going through and him growing up with two paraplegic people in his family, you know, he's obviously has people to take care of. He doesn't have the best contract terms. And even still, when he held out for that contract, in complete contrast, Michael Jordan was like, I thought Scottie was being selfish. I thought he was being selfish during this time. I'm just like, yo, I don't know.
Yeah. But you know what? That goes to Jordan's, just what we talked about earlier, his will to win. You know, he just wants to win, you know, that, and that's what made him so great. But there was a little bit of a human cost to that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Speaking of his competitive nature, we had flashbacks to his father saying, if you want to bring out the best in Michael, tell him he can't do something or he can't do it as good as somebody else.
Yeah.
And it'll drive him and force him to be better.
Yeah.
I was like trying to think, like, am I that way? Eddie, are you that way? Like, I don't know, Randall, how are you in context of competitiveness or ambition? And I mean, entertainment, I feel, is like different because no matter how hard you work, it's not a direct correlation of the success that you will have. Yeah. But growing up, or do you have a sibling or anybody that really drove you to be more competitive or more ambitious? Or
I have an older brother, and growing up, we were so different. You know, he was actually the athlete, and he was just so good at athletics and competitive things. And I was always more the artist, you know. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, I never felt that competitive with him, because I knew he was going to beat me at almost everything, you know. But I did. So if anything, it made me like kind of just focus on my lane. And mm-hmm. and I think in general, that stuck with me throughout adult life. Just, mm-hmm. You know, if anything, I feel like I'm competitive with myself. Mm. But especially in acting, like you say, it's like, you know, we all are so different as individuals, you know, and what we bring to the table is specific to who we are. So
right.
in that sense, we're not, I don't see it as a competition. I just see it as really kind of tap into yourself and mm-hmm. I bring that out, and you will come out authentic, and no one else will be able to do that. They'll mm-hmm. be able to do them, but they won't be able to do
right.
you, you know? And I feel that's, like the same must go for music.
Correct? Yeah, I think that is fairly true. I think the one thing that is different though for me, and I think part of it is me having built a career in Korea.
Yeah.
And this is where the inner Koreanness of us comes out. It's everything in Korea, unfortunately, I think unfortunately, is done by a ranking. It's like, right. who's number one? Who's number two? And it's like, even at school, it's like number one, two, three, four, five. And right. I remember growing up, my parents were like, I remember there was this kid who was number two. I was number one. Or like, why can't you be this or that? And I was like, man, why are parents like this? But then you go to Korea and you realize that societally, everything is ranked. Everything has a chart. The yeah. songs have a chart. The trends have a chart. Literally anything you could think of. I don't know. There's so many number one chicken shops in Korea. There's like 500 number one chicken shops, yeah. right?
Number one seafood gumbo in yeah. Florida.
It's just ridiculous. And so I think from that point, like I remember having struggled when I got to Korea, being like, I should be comfortable just saying, this is my sound. This is what I'm doing. It's cool.
Right.
But it was the environment in which you are in, where everybody becomes hyper competitive and hyper
of course
critical. And I think part of that is why Korea has been able to develop into this economic powerhouse and
yeah.
modernize so quickly. Right. But there is this social aspect where it's not as celebrated to be, oh, just like, be you, do you, who cares?
Right.
And I
right.
think they're slowly building to that, and it'll take time.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about Jordan's legacy as basketball's greatest of all time. As I was watching this, I kept thinking to myself, like, is there any other profession that you can be respected at such a young age and regarded as a prodigy and people just can't ask any questions? Like, is there anything else that you can just be like, okay, he's the best. We have to respect him, even though he's 17.
Maybe. I feel like it's athletics.
Yeah.
That's like, is the only, like, you're not going to, like, the spelling bee champion at age 15 is not going to, like, blow me away. Like, I'm glad you can spell, but, like, I'm not going to question, I'm going to question other things about you.
I guess musicians kind of get that too, right?
Yeah.
If you're like a prodigy.
Some. Yeah.
Yeah, way. Musicians, but musicians, it's, you know, it's also a matter of kind of taste and what you're into,
right, right.
you know, whereas with basketball, it's just, it's that, but it's right. also just numbers, you know?
Right. right.
Black it's and pure white. Performance. Pure yeah. performance and statistics. So.
So he obviously had a lot of, how do I say? He was very naturally gifted in some yeah. ways, but it was his mental strength and his desire to win that really stood out. I got
yeah.
a lot of Cristiano Ronaldo vibes, having seen his documentary and mm-hmm. following him closely. I just saw a lot of similarities there. But mm-hmm. at what cost and what sacrifices do you need to make to get to that point? What I mean by that, what I'm trying to allude to is surely you cannot become the greatest of all time without, you know, burning some people along the way, you know? Mm. And I want to touch back on Scottie Pippen and how he was just more concerned about winning rather than helping a friend out or a teammate out in mm-hmm. this situation. So I wanted to just throw that into the conversation and see what y'all thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that to be great at anything, yeah, there's gonna be sacrifice, right? I remember seeing this interview on Conan O'Brien. I think about this a lot. Do you guys know Gerard Carmichael, the comedian? Have you heard of him?
I think I know the name. I'm not familiar with him very well, though.
Well, he was a guest on Conan O'Brien, and they were talking about, you know, being great. Mm-hmm. And Conan has a family, he has kids. And one thing Gerard said was like, well, you know, you're so great at this. You can't be a great father. You must not be a great father because like, there's no way you can be that great at something without sacrificing something, you know? Right. And I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but I do feel like some human things that take time and effort have to be sacrificed, because if you want to be really great at what you do, you got to put in the time and effort, right?
Right.
And that time and that time and effort has to be taken away from something else, you know? Right.
I can agree with that statement. There is no perfect person. There is no perfect being. And right. Even when it comes to careers, it's like, you know, we go to extremes to pursue a certain profession or to be the best at our craft or hone our craft. But that comes at the price of, you know, balance.
Yeah.
There's no balance. And I think that's directly reflected in my life. And I don't know about, you know, Randall, about yours, but I know even to Eddie, like Eddie and I, we work absurd hours.
Yeah.
It's not healthy, but it's this inner thing to be like, if we're going to be the best at whatever we do, we have to do it that way. And I think in the case of Jordan watching this documentary, I was like, this dude works crazy hard. He has incredible, incredible athletic abilities. No question. Incredibly competitive. But maybe he's lacking on this thing of empathy.
Right.
Maybe, you know, you can't have it all. Like, and I think if somebody is best and amazing, and you're such a strong human, it's hard for people around you to give you a reality check, to give you like
totally
a little hit in the back of the head and be like, yo, like, hey, yeah, you can't do that. You can't say that, or you should think this way. And yeah. I, as great as he is as an athlete, there are moments in this documentary where I was like, but is he the best, like, human being person?
Right. Is he a good friend?
Yeah.
Exactly. And I actually want to talk about a YouTube video of, do you guys remember the rapper Chamillionaire?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know Chamillionaire, look him up. He has a great song called Riding Dirty. actually, one of the most polite guys I've ever seen in interviews. Seems like such a sweetheart. He even bleeps himself out as he's telling. Like, he's talking to people in interviews. He's like, yeah, I don't like that. You know,
yeah,
it's like super kind dude. And he tells a story that went quite viral. And I'm sure after this podcast, some people can look into it. But he talks about the first time he saw Michael Jordan at one of his auctions, like where they're auctioning off Michael Jordan jerseys for charity. And he just talks about his experience and how Michael was just so disrespected by him asking for his autograph. And Randall, just like you, he's like, this is my idol. He's like Michael Jackson and Michael Jordan. That's it.
Mm.
And he just like rudely put him off to a point where like the entire room was totally dead quiet.
Uncomfortable. Yeah.
Uncomfortable. And even like the best players at the time, Reggie and like Charles Barkley, they're just like, yo, you know, he's just kind of like that. Don't worry about it, you know?
Right.
And so, again, Eric, back to your point, this is a documentary that's always going to favor the protagonist. And we want to just look at this guy's YouTube clips and be like, oh, it's so amazing. Because it is amazing. It's extraordinary. But at what cost? What human cost? did he get to that point, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stories floating around of this guy being a pretty big, which, you know, you expect. You got to, mm-hmm. I mean, well, you don't necessarily have to expect it, but you shouldn't be surprised, you know? It's
right.
Like you say, Eric, you know, people aren't checking him. People aren't, mm-hmm. Aren't influencing him. He's influencing everybody else, you know.
Right.
It's which is, yeah, I mean, that's that, that I guess that's the cost for some people. But then, you know, you meet other goats, and Tom Hanks, nicest person in the world, probably. You know, I mean, I've worked with him,
Tom
and he's
Hanks,
super nice.
I want to be Tom Hanks's friend.
Yeah. Eric, like, you're not the only one.
I listen to his interviews. I'm like, this dude is just a pleasant guy. Like, he's top of the world, pleasant guy.
I got a Tom Hanks story. So it's right behind me. Tom Hanks sent me a fan letter.
What?
And this was,
oh,
this
that's so
was,
cool.
And also, this was many years ago. This was like, I think it was before Fresh Off the Boat.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, because I was on this show called Veep, and he was such a fan of Veep.
Yes.
I randomly got this letter, and at the top of the letter, it says H-A-N-X, and it's hand-typed. And it's
wow.
This basically, and I worked with him many, many years before, so he remembered me from that, and then he sent me this. And just the fact that this guy took the time to, you know, write that he, like, loved what I was doing. And I, you know, was not, like, at all, like, super famous. You know, I was just a working actor. Just getting that letter was just so, like, it moved me so much. And it was so, you know, motivating to me. And, like, you're doing the right thing. Stay in it. If Tom Hanks is a fan, then you're doing the right thing, you know.
That's so cool.
I love that.
Yeah,
that is so cool. Do you have it like framed up on the wall somewhere? Literally.
Yes. I mean, we couldn't see what you're pointing to because your background is,
oh,
like,
wow,
right,
that is
here.
So cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Man.
It's so cool. And you know, I mean, I don't know if Michael Jordan is hand typing letters to young basketball players in high school, but you know, maybe he is. I don't know.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
But you know, we'll give him benefit of the doubt, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And also, you know, I mean, yeah, to get, in his defense, he could have had bad days,
right,
here and
right.
there, and those days happen to be, you know, where other people were around, and then they
right.
get these stories and they spread them. And I mean, I feel lucky in the sense that I'm not at a level of fame where it's become like really like a problem, you know. I'm kind of in this nice little pocket, you know, where like people who do like my work, they really know my work, you know, and
mm-hmm.
they like it, and they know me, and they're fans of the show, and they're generally really sweet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then outside of that, people like think I'm just another Asian dude walking around, you know, like they don't like, you know,
with a fantastic
the
mustache.
Best of both worlds.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is what you're telling me. It's
I'm
like,
in a good pocket, I feel
yeah,
like.
That's like my thing about when I'm in the States, that I love being in the States. It's like I can just be normal, and like people can recognize me. I would say what's up, hi, but it's like that's like the best balance for me.
Yeah.
I feel comfortable.
Balance. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But man, you know, speaking of, I guess, you know, this, I don't want to say darker side, but like maybe potentially not the best day, pleasant side of Michael Jordan.
Right.
Beyond that, there is his legacy, you know, as arguably the greatest of all time. And,
yeah.
you know, there are questions these days of, is it LeBron or is it Michael? Is it LeBron or is it Michael? And, you know, there's no definitive right answer.
Right.
But, and also to be, again, for our listeners, I don't know about basketball either. I don't know much about basketball either. So I'm not the one to be making any sort of call on that.
Yeah.
But I think what's interesting is his legacy. What people will remember him for and how they remember him is as the greatest player in the world. The biggest character, personality on the court ever. And I guess to kind of contextualize it for us, you know, what do you hope your legacy is? Or do you think that way? Or, you know, are there certain people in your life that have really built something that you find meaningful or you see as impactful in their legacy?
Well, for me, I have goals, and I've achieved a lot of goals that I had many years ago, and I have more goals that I want mm-hmm. to achieve, but I am at a point where I don't want, you know, it's not that important. It's not important to me to be a goat at anything, you know. And I have a daughter and I'm married. And I want to be there for my kid. I want to be a great dad. Mm-hmm. That's like more important to me than being the greatest at anything. At the same time, I do want to, you know, do great things and keep, you know, keep having fun in this business. But I am at a point in my life where, you know, maybe when I was younger, it was like, oh, I want to be the best at this or that, or, you know, I want to get these awards and I still want to get these awards and I still want to do great things, but it's not like I definitely don't have the kind of drive where I would sacrifice that human side to get there.
That's great.
What about you? Because you're young, you know, and so you're kind of, I'd imagine, maybe, and you don't have a kid, I think.
I do not yet. I think we have some time before I have a kid, but I don't know. I don't think like being the best is like necessarily for me. I think being the best version of myself is probably most important. Being the most thoughtful, well-prepared version of who I can be is probably the most meaningful. And hopefully when I show those sides of myself, people derive and find meaning and impact through that. Yeah. And I think that's probably it. I think the one thing that I do find myself consistently going back for, thinking back to, is just more, you know, representation. And I don't particularly love talking about it because I feel like it's overly harped on.
Right.
But growing up, I think it is something that in my subconscious, it was such a big issue for me of not ever feeling like I was accepted anywhere. And even in Korea, like that was the other thing. It's like, I go to Korea, but I'm not Korean. They see me as an American.
Right.
So my entire life, it's like going back and forth of like, I have to consistently prove myself.
Right.
And in my head, people may not see this or may not know this about me, but in my head, I am always the underdog. And so it's always about proving people wrong.
Yeah.
Not to a level of competitiveness like Michael, but for my own sake. And so I think that more than a legacy, that's probably how people will see it. And if they find meaning from it, then great. That's kind of how I think.
But that's great. That's very, thoughtful and the right approach, I think, you know?
Thank you. I mean, I'm just making it up as I go, dude.
We all are. What about you, Eddie? I mean, you're married, right?
Yes. And a lot of things have definitely changed since I got married. I don't know. Hearing you and seeing that you're a family man, and when I look at your Instagram, I just get like a lot of wholesome vibes, you know?
Yeah.
I love that kids right now can look at what you're building, what Eric is building, and who you guys are as public figures, and can get inspired by that and see that there is good representation there. I think, like Eric said, just even showcasing these ordinary jobs and professions, like, and the roles that you have played, I think it's going to have a huge reverberating effect down the line to future generations. I think Eric and I, growing up in the South, as he touched on, not many Asians, not nearly as many as they are now. So I don't know how different my life would have been if I had seen people such as yourself on screen. But I love that these improvements are being made and these strides are being made. So back to the question about being a goat on anything, I just want to support Eric. Anyone I work on, I'll try my best on those projects, but I'm not too concerned on getting the Forbes 40 under 40 accolades and whatnot. Just want to do good work and have fun along the way. Yeah,
that's great. And that's it. Yeah.
Awesome. I mean, I think we can maybe like start wrapping up the talk about the show. I feel like We probably gave our listeners a lot more basketball talk than they actually signed up for. But if you guys are curious, then you guys can go in and watch the show. But it's about the time where we have to tell our listeners if we commit or if we quit this show. So, Randall, since you brought the show to us, you can go ahead and do the honors of letting us know how you felt about the first two episodes. And if you commit, why our listeners should definitely watch this show.
For me, it's a strong commit. And it's not about like my age or my era or the fact that I grew up watching this team. Although, you know, that does help. I mean, this is a very human story, you know, about what it takes to be great. All the stuff that we talked about, you know, but also like business and how business and whether it be art or sports or any sort of endeavor, how they often conflict. Mm-hmm. And and just, I mean, really, it's a story about a family too. It's a family story. It's about these exceptional group of people who were in this place at this time together, and what happens when, you know, when the again, the business end of things start to affect. Mm-hmm. The formation and the relationships within that family. It's just such a fascinating story. So I highly recommend it.
All right, there we go. I'm so glad you brought this to us suggested this so we could talk about it. But that's a commit from Randall. Eddie, how about yourself?
Yeah, it's 100% commit for me. I think that I made that very clear. I know you guys aren't as big sports fans, but can appreciate the story. I am a huge sports fan. And given the current situation in no live sports, it was pulling at a different part of my heart to learn a little bit more about something that I followed indirectly. I was wearing all this Chicago Bulls merch and I was like, I don't even know why I'm wearing this. It's just cool. And just the power of the brand, what it means to be the greatest of all time, how to get there. I'm not going to watch the rest of the series thinking, how can I be more like Mike? But I think there are little bits that I can take and apply it to my own life. So I'm super excited. Even though it's on ESPN, it took us like 30 minutes to figure out how to stream this thing. Eric, how about you?
It is a hard commit for me as well. I think, you know, for all the reasons that you guys have touched on. Plus, I really love like politics. I love watching how people maneuver and what business strategy or what psychological strategy people are pulling at what points to get their intended outcome. And so I'm curious, not so much unlike Michael right now, I'm more curious on Scotty. I need Scotty to get paid. I need him to get paid. I need a redemption story. Yes. I don't like our, what are the names?
Krause. The Jerrys.
I don't like our Jerrys. Like, I want them gone. This is a great... This could be a Korean drama.
Okay? Oh, totally.
This could be a Korean drama. So it's built up perfectly for me. If you guys just want a great story, you don't have to like sports. I highly recommend it. I am a 100% commit as well.
Yeah. Just to add to that, it's a true story. I think that's the difference between everything that we've discussed so far.
It is. Yeah. I mean, and yeah, going back to the Korean drama again, like I was bummed that we couldn't talk about Itaewon Class, but I mean, this is kind of Itaewon Class in a different, you know, Jordan is Seroy, the Jerrys, they're, Changa.
Oh my they're God. All there. Keep going.
That's all I got.
Very good parallels. Very good parallels.
Oh my goodness.
So Randall, I mean, we really appreciate you making time, but before we let you go, we have some questions from fans on Twitter.
Sure.
Yeah. Let's see. Where should we start with? Okay, if this is from XCV, some very complicated thing. If quarantine was an episode in Fresh Off the Boat, what would it be like and what would your character be doing?
Oh, gosh. That would be... Well, I mean, I would probably be working at the Cattleman's Ranch Steakhouse doing takeout. Okay. You know?
Yeah. Adjusting to the times.
Adjusting to the times. Yeah. But keeping the you know, the small business going,
mm-hmm.
And hopefully getting a lot of support from the community, mm-hmm. the neighbors, Honey and Marvin and everyone in the cul-de-sac. Hopefully they'll come by and support the restaurant.
Cool. Cool. Yeah. This is from Newbie Rider. Question for Randall. Which show, doesn't matter where it's from, is the most underrated show and should be seen by everyone?
Oh, gosh. Underrated show. I'm like a big fan of sitcoms. I grew up on sitcoms, and mm-hmm. I like classic sitcoms, like old classic sitcoms. And,
like Family Matters?
Family Matters, yeah, but even going further back, like,
oh man,
yeah. I mean, I literally like have the background of every sitcom. There's The Office.
That's incredible.
Like, I just love sitcoms.
That's hilarious.
And there's a classic sitcom. Here's the background to it, called The Dick Van Dyke Show. And I just love The Dick Van Dyke Show. And I think it's timeless. And I think anybody at any age would enjoy it. So I recommend that.
Randall, a personal question for you. What types of meetings do you take on Zoom, and do you use the Office background?
Work related, you know, I'll use the Office background. If I want to really, you know, remind people of Fresh Off the Boat, I'll use the yeah. I'll show myself.
Yeah, there you know. Go. That's flex. Just for people listening, for context, we're on this Zoom call and Randall has like 10 different backgrounds of different sets. So if you guys are curious, go to our YouTube and you guys can check it out. That's great.
Yeah.
Last question from a fan. This is from AKA Z Miette. Do you plan on releasing a hip hop track anytime in the near future? Anytime in the future?
No. No. I did it. So there were way back in the day, I was in this hip hop band, and the band that was in Always Be My Maybe was actually a version of that hip hop band that I was in way back in the day. It was like live instruments and we were just a bunch of kids out of college having fun. So we, you know, for the movie, we kind of brought that back and recorded some songs, and that was great fun. But I'm also way too old at this point to be doing anything cool like that.
Dude, Jay-Z does it. You could definitely do it. I'm just saying.
But Jay-Z is Jay-Z.
Let us know. We can help you on the music side if you need. Not that you need our help, but if you need.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, Randall, before we let you go, last thing, you know, what's coming up for you? I know this is kind of uncertain times, but we also saw that you're working on True Story with Ed Helms from The Office, who, by the way, went to high school with our cousin.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You mean the Chicago Bulls cousin who loves basketball? Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a really cool show. It's, again, everything is pushed, so we don't know mm-hmm. when these things will happen. But that's a really cool storytelling show where we get people, everyday people, telling crazy stories, and then we have a bunch of actors and comedians basically giving those people their own little biopic, you know, they'll recreate those stories. So that's a super fun thing that will be coming out one day. Okay. And then there's WandaVision that we talked about, the Marvel show that I'm real excited about that will be coming out one day, and a bunch of things kind of that are in the works.
Well,
yeah,
we'll stay tuned. We're going to keep watching, and thank you so much for doing what you do and entertaining us through all your multitudes of characters.
This guy is living the dream. I mean, you're in a Marvel, Disney, you've been in The Office, like, you know, it is really, really amazing. And thank you for being such great representation.
Thank you. And it was so fun hanging with you guys. And I can't wait to do it in person.
Yeah. Likewise. Randall, please stay safe. And hopefully we get to hang out very, very soon.
For sure. All right, guys.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Have a good one. All right, guys. So that's it. That's a wrap on this special guest episode of Commit or Quit with Randall Park, as we discussed Last Dance. Hope you guys enjoyed learning more about Randall and his recommendation. Now, let us know if you agree with him and us. You know, we all committed to it. Would you and will you commit to Last Dance? Tag us on our Twitter at The Dive Studios to let us know your thoughts.
Yeah, and be sure to subscribe to Dive Studios on YouTube at youtube.com/Dive Studios. And follow us on Instagram at The Dive Studios and also TikTok. And make sure to subscribe to our Patreon as well at patreon.com/Dive Studios. As you guys know, it is very, very helpful to us at this time. So we really appreciate it.
Lastly, please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss any new episodes. We have more amazing shows to talk about. We have more incredible guests joining us. So stay tuned. Leave us a rate and review. Subscribe and have a great day. We'll talk to you again soon on Commit or Quit.
Quit.
Bye.
Bye.
Can't swatch in store? Finding your perfect foundation match is basically impossible right now. That's why Il Makiage's online quiz is such a game changer. It finds your perfect match in seconds from the comfort of your own home. And it gets even better. With Try Before You Buy, you can try your full-size shade at home free for 14 days. So convenient in times like these. Take the quiz at ilmakiage.com/quiz. That's ilmakiage.com/quiz.